Hello and welcome to a very special episode of the IAA Mobility Visionary Club podcast. It's special because we're coming to you live from IAA Mobility in Munich, and we have a live studio audience, which is very exciting. A big welcome to our audience. Today's topic is battery technology and battery passports. I'm going to lay my cards on the table right out of the gate. I am not an expert in battery technology or battery passports. Fortunately, I have two guests who are experts to help walk us through the latest trends and developments. I'm joined today by John Tintinnelli of SAE International. John, welcome.
Thank you.
And also by Dr. Simon Anglica of Battery Associates. Simon, welcome.
Thanks so much.
So the ongoing electrification in the automotive industry is increasing the number of vehicle models available. Products are improving. Sales volumes are rising. What risks and limitations do you see in this development? Simon, let's start with you.
Well, John, do you want to go first on this?
Yeah, sure. I guess I could. So, yeah.
You're that's so polite.
Yeah. So, I guess there are two risks. One, that it may not be going fast enough. Mm-hmm. And the other, which is a contrary position, that is, it's going too fast for infrastructure to keep up. So, I'll give you an example. Like just here in Germany, 15% of the new registrations of automobiles this last year were just EVs. And so it's a 34% increase over last year. So that's in Germany. In the US, we are more than doubling the number of models of electric vehicles that we will be offering in the US market by the end of 2024. So a 134-ish could even go up from there. EV models. So that is extraordinary increase in EVs. Meanwhile, though, we have a charging infrastructure that in which 30% on average of charging transactions fail for one reason or another. So we're building out this charging infrastructure, and yet we're essentially only using 70% of its capacity. So that's a lot of investment for, not necessarily so great a return. So in addition to pushing out more EVs, we need to push out, of course, more and better grid infrastructure.
Better grid infrastructure. Okay. EV battery technology is rapidly evolving. You guys know that much better than I do. Can you discuss the latest breakthroughs in battery technology and the potential to revolutionize the electric vehicle industry?
Absolutely. And I think it's really exciting, right? If you're at the IAA, right, mobility, of course, we think about the electric vehicles. And we had like NMC, NCA, you know, been really the technology of choice. And then we had the launch of LFP, which really has been, you know, a really fast riser in the space. You know, forecast talking about 40% or so of LFP. What's exciting about this, we don't need nickel and cobalt anymore. We will talk about this a bit later of the sourcing challenges and questions there. So it's a big, you know, development in this regards. We're also not talking about new chemistry such as sodium ion, where people were talking about this for a long, long time. We're actually now replacing the lithium as well. We now have the sodium instead, which is even more abundant and easier to get. And then also we're talking about other technologies like solid state. Of course, you know, if people are talking about that, it has been a challenging topic to really implement. And there's still a lot of debate around it. What will be, you know, the future for that and how, what size will it, you know, get to if it gets commercialized eventually in automotive sector as well. But yeah, I think overall there's a lot of development. And I think also one thing which I find super exciting, if you think about this LFP topic, how fast technologies can rise, where, you know, people didn't have it really on the radar. It was really, I think, a surprise for many. And now we also have like other modification, like LMFP. We have seen fast charging also here around the expo, right? We can see that, you know, companies now showing really fast charging LFPs, etc. So overall, there's a lot of innovation going on. And I think, you know, there's still, you know, surprises potentially to come, even though we definitely have the technologies today available to really ramp up electrification. I think that's also one last thing to mention on that. Even though innovation is exciting, new things are exciting, one thing to be really clear about is what we have today really allows us to electrify the full fleet from a battery standpoint. And of course, there's always improvements possible, but we have the technologies also available today to do the first wave at least.
Okay, that sounds like good news to me. Let's talk about the impact of the increasing battery market and future recycling requirements. Vehicle electrification plays a pivotal role in driving sustainable mobility, but there are negative impacts, for example, around scarce materials. Can you describe the environmental, social, and governance impacts for us?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, Simon mentioned some of the minerals used in battery technology today. So cobalt, most of that, 68%, I think, comes from the Democratic Republic of the Congo, has never had a great human rights record in its history, former colonial power. So that's not the best place to be. We've got about 58% of the world's lithium coming from South American countries, almost Chile, Bolivia, Argentina. A bit better, but also is in other areas. You've got formerly artisanal mining, which can be legal or illegal, but it's largely unsupervised. Mining often run by criminal groups and that sort of thing, and it's very difficult to police and monitor that. And then Indonesia being the largest producer of nickel in the world, a bit better, but essentially the concentration of these minerals are not necessarily located in places where you've got really formal oversight over raw material extraction.
And maybe one thing to add as well, to add to the artisanal mining as well, right? So there's also other, mining, looking at lithium, for example, right? Which is mostly mined right now in Chile and Australia. And there's different ways to also mine that. And it can also have an environmental impact locally, right? And then also in the processing. So right now, a lot of processing is done in China. China really dominates the battery raw material supply chain. You know, from a sourcing, a lot of these minerals are quite evenly spread or spread around the world. But then processing happens a lot in China. And there's also, question then on the environmental footprint. There's different ways, again, you can, extract these minerals out of the rock or out of other sources. And, there can be a lot of energy also used there, and a lot of coal, and there's gas. There's different ways you can also extract that and what energy sources you use. And I think that's another aspect to it, right? I think one is there's an ethical perspective. And then there's also an environmental perspective we also shouldn't be to overlook, which we're also, I'm sure, going to touch on later on as well.
Yeah. So you raised some good points. I mean, a lot of this stuff is coming from countries that don't exactly have robust human rights protections. There's issues of water scarcity, child labor, the scarce materials themselves. What can be done to tackle the impact?
Maybe one thing to just, I think, start, and that's probably also where we're going to touch on later when we go to, the topic of battery passports. But I think a big topic is visibility. And I think right now it's just very hard to know, right? There's different ways you can get these materials. You can buy them on the open market, which tend to be blended together, right? Then you don't really exactly know where all of these materials are coming together. It's quite hard to know if you get a ton of material, what are all the real sources, right? And there's, a lot of blending going on, different markets. So I think really understanding where it's coming from, and then also understanding, what's happening on the ground. Of course, there's, certification, agency and ratings, et cetera, also, getting more prominent, but really getting, I think, the full transparency. I think that's really one of the starting points there as well.
You mentioned battery passports. Let's just go ahead and tear the lid off that. What are battery passports? How is it going to improve battery recycling and circularity?
Digital battery passports, or what's now called sort of digital product passport, because this is also envisioned as maybe the first of this kind of documentation, visibility, traceability into materials or a system or digital product, is a way of keeping track, really, of the life cycle of a battery in this case, taking into account everything from where the materials are mined all the way till its end of life cycle use, and it being tracked in a distributed database, basically with a QR code or some other form of ID. QR code is one that's being proposed now. And with an immutable record. So you can, with a battery passport, exactly based on whatever data points you've been tracking, the history of that battery. And that's useful, across its life cycle, both for second life use, you're reselling that vehicle, so you have an idea of, what the state of health is of, for example, the battery system, also the recyclability of the elements within those battery modules.
So how can I imagine this? Is this a B2B thing? Am I, as the consumer, going to see something like, you know, those fair trade stickers on coffee? Will it be visible to me? How will I know what kind of battery I'm buying? Do we know yet?
I think maybe one thing to add to this as well, right? I think there's a lot of different definitions of what a battery passport can be, right? So I think people, there's different, you know, organizations have coined that term, like, you know, the World Economic Forum, and then now the Global Battery Alliance working there, but also local initiatives in different regions, such as Germany with the battery pass, European level, et cetera. And a lot of companies now developing their own battery passports. So there's also a lot of definitions, and not necessarily everyone means the same thing. For me, like, if you really, and I think you touched on this, right, from the start to end, if you really think about, give an ID to every step of, you know, a battery or any component of it from the start to end. So you want to give an ID to the raw material, you know, where it all starts with, all the way through, you know, production, then usage, and then recycling, and then again, bring it back to the start of a new battery as well. So you want to essentially want to be, have an ID to everything. And then you can also have an ID to all of the different stakeholders who interact with it. That will be one approach, right? To make it quite practical. And what you mentioned, for example, from a user perspective, it's a big debate, right? So we have seen now, maybe a bit like with your washing machine in Europe, right? You have, you know, your rating from like, you know, A to F or so. And it's a bit similar to that, right? You would get a, let's say, rating of, you know, how good was this battery and, you know, how good is that? And that's one consumer facing potential implementation of what a battery passport can enable. That's definitely as you know, a topic where people are discussing. The question then, of course, is again, like, how do you do this, right? Like, how do you rate this? And I think the exciting part of also was the battery passport. And again, if you look at the example for these other kind of, you know, stickers, et cetera, we have on products, is these things don't tend to be static, right? Things can change. If you look at it, like if you had like a washing machine, you know, 10 years ago or 5 years ago or so, it would have a different rating and probably would rate higher right now, or a fridge, what we have today. So this is getting more stringent and more strict over time. And that's a similar plan also with the battery passports, right? You start somewhere, you bring visibility in, then over time you can say, we want to get better, we want to keep getting better. And then why, you know, all of these different, aspects like, you know, environmental and ethical, et cetera, gets improved over time.
Are there people who say, wait a minute, this is a risk for my intellectual property to reveal transparently, like, where every element and this came from? Is that an argument that people make?
I mean, one could, but that, at least under the EU regulation, which is, you know, I think is supposed to be active this last month and be fully in effect by February 2027, that sets the legal framework for that not really to be possible.
So it's coming.
It's coming.
Okay.
At least, you know, at least through in the European Union markets, you have other major markets, China doing sort of, you know, its own thing and more on the sort of the research side. The U.S. is still, they're sort of looking and seeing what's happening in Europe and elsewhere in order to figure out how they want to align. But it is absolutely happening. You know, Battery Alliance has already developed a prototype, and there's been other efforts, even from Germany, on the battery passport. EU's funding this big time with a time limit to get this done. So absolutely.
So will it be a regulatory requirement, or is this rather something that will become a profitable business for someone to go out and issue these battery passports?
Both. I mean, yeah, I mean, this is, you know, this is why change and technological change is so important. And when you hang on to old technologies, old sources of energy, eventually you stagnate an economy. By investing in new technologies, by investing in new sources of energy, new sources of transportation, you create whole new economies. So there will be a whole new economy that comes out of this. There are going to be specialists in testing, in tracing, in auditing, in reporting, and data storage and management. There's really a ton that'll go along with this. And don't forget, this is a first step. This is for batteries. And as Simon, you know, and I were talking at dinner last Saturday, this is a first step for a model for other types of products out there.
And maybe one thing to also add to the listeners, right, is So if you look at the European battery regulation, EU battery regulation, right, it has a lot of different things going to come into place. It's passed now. So as you said, about a month or 2 months ago, and it's going to be enforced in a few months. And the exciting part is now between now and 2036, there's a lot of different things which have to get implemented. So there's a lot of different regulations, and maybe also to be any listener to be aware, battery passport is only one of them. There's a lot of other things to get complied to. So if you're in the battery space, really look out, and you probably want to prepare yourself. And then again, the battery passport will come into force in 2027. So that's like the year you want to look out for. And that's where in the EU, the battery passport is to come into force.
2027.
Yeah.
Great. Okay.
So it's, you know, you can count the years, right?
Not long at all. In addition, and maybe separately to battery passports, what other solutions are there to increase transparency along the battery supply chain and to increase battery recycling abilities?
I think that's a few things, right? I think companies right now, they can do their own initiatives. We have seen it, right? So some companies are more forward thinking and they're launching their own initiatives. Want to get transparency. There's also other agencies like IRMA and others, a lot of different traceability providers like Circular, but also others, MindSpider, Optil, et cetera. So there's different ones out there. And again, there's, I think companies right now, they want to show to the consumer that they care about this, right? I think nobody wants child labor in the battery, right? I think it's a clear given that people want something against it, and it's a big liability issue there as well. And again, I think people want to find solutions. And I think what's also interesting to be seen, right? So I think there's other, some initiatives are quite ambitious and they really want to bring a full transparency across the value chain. And some other ones will be more on the compliance route, right? They will look very carefully what's required in the EU and they want to, you know, do whatever's needed to comply. And I think then, especially also because we spoke about this, the EU now has this coming into law. A lot of other regions in the world don't right now. If you want to operate on the European market, you have to comply. So that's a lot of players because the European market tends to be quite big from a consumer perspective. But there's still other regions where there isn't something in place yet. So also I want to give a lot of encouragement to think about it. How can you, you know, create your own systems and maybe leapfrog? We've seen in the US with the Inflation Reduction Act, amazing development, you know, $78 billion US dollars unlocked in batteries very quickly already. So maybe US can leapfrog the EU. I want to give this challenge to our friends across the pond. And the same with China, right? Has seen there's a lot of developments over there already. So it'd be great to see developments there too.
Okay. I have learned so much from this conversation. Thank you, guys. Before we let you go, I'd love to do a quick round of rapid fire. Are you up for it?
Shoot.
Okay, here we go. John, increase battery capacity and EV range or expand charging infrastructure?
Expand charging infrastructure.
Okay. Simon, strict regulations or incentivizing effective measures to improve sustainability?
Both.
That's a cheat. You got to pick one.
Not sure. I think, I mean, it's exciting. I think depends where you are. I think in Europe, I would probably argue regulation from a consumer perspective. In the US, probably incentives. May have seen it with Inflation Reduction Act.
Okay. John, do you prefer lithium ion batteries or are you more eager to explore the potential of solid state batteries?
Right now, lithium ion.
Lithium ion. Okay. Simon, what do you prefer? The convenience of charging an EV at home or the speed of external fast charging stations?
Because I don't have a charging at my home, probably fast charging.
Yeah. Okay. John, are you an in-car karaoke star or a peaceful drive enthusiast? I'm not going to ask you to perform, so you can give an honest answer.
I sing.
I love it. I knew it. What's your go-to song?
Oh, that I won't share.
Okay. All right. Some things have to stay a secret. I respect it. Simon, final one for you. Electric hot hatch for speed and agility or a luxurious EV cruiser for comfort and style?
Probably the first one. Yeah,
First one, the electric hot hatch for speed and agility. Guys, a final question. If you only had one wish to speed up the development of battery passports, what would you wish for and why?
Improved traceability, which we're doing through the SAE International. One of our battery committees doing traceability. That's
improved traceability. Okay. Yeah. Simon?
Being forward thinking. Like, you know, go out there, look for resources, like also Battery Associates, batteryregulation.eu. We have working a lot of resources, make them available. So really look into this now rather than being surprised when it just happens in a few years' time.
Okay. Dr. Simon Engelke, founder and chair of Battery Associates, and John Tintinelli, Europe General Manager, SAE International. Thank you to both of you for sharing your knowledge and telling us a little bit more about what we can look forward to in Europe with battery passports in 2027. It was a pleasure having you.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thanks so much, Sarah.